We take a look at the week in Washington. The Justice Department says it plans to keep investigating co-conspirators of Jeffrey Epstein after his suicide in prison this weekend. President Trump and the Senate Majority Leader are getting calls to expand background checks for gun sales. And the field of Democratic candidates for president spent time this week at the Iowa State Fair shaking hands and eating corn dogs almost 6 months before the state's presidential caucus. Our question for you this week is, how important is it to you that candidates for president show up in your area and put in some face time? What are the events or places you think candidates should be coming to as being down-to-earth a quality you look for in candidates? Have you ever met a presidential candidate or seen him in person? And if you live in Iowa and are listening, what do you think about all the hullabaloo? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lauren Gambino is a political correspondent for The Guardian. Lauren, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Lauren, let's start with the reported suicide of financier and sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Attorney General William Barr weighed in after it happened on Saturday. Here's some of what he had to say.
Let me assure you that this case will continue on against anyone who was complicit with Epstein. Any co-conspirators should not rest easy. The victims deserve justice, and they will get it.
So what does that mean in terms of ongoing criminal investigations now that the central figure in this case of trafficking is dead?
I mean, it's completely upended the case. You know, he was at the center of it, and much of the focus of this investigation would have been into the crimes that he committed. Now, you know, with his death, they're turning to these what he calls co-conspirators, or the people who are alleged to have helped him, you know, procure or lure these young, you know, teenagers, some of them, to his various properties, you know, for these encounters. It's obviously very grim, but there's a lot of, you know, there's evidence that he had a whole network of people who helped him bring these women to women, girls, you know, to his apartment, to his mansions, to his properties. So I think there's still this hunger for justice for a lot of these women now who've risked a lot to come forward. You know, they've been struggling with the ramifications and the consequences, both emotional and legal, from the fallout. And now that he's no longer able to stand trial, they want to see justice served. And that's why I think you're seeing Attorney General Barr use the full force of his agency to go make sure that they will see justice.
And another focus now for the Justice Department is why this high-profile inmate of a federal prison was able to complete a suicide attempt like this. Questions raised about oversight, about guards and the warden at the prison. Some staff there have been reassigned already while this investigation is going on. What do we know about what the Justice Department is saying about what they're going to be looking at in regards to the death of Epstein itself?
Well, you know, this is a big embarrassment. He was kept at a correctional facility where they, you know, where they're known for keeping notorious criminals. You know, right now, he was one of the most high profile criminals behind bars at the moment. And so I think, you know, now they want to know there's a comprehensive investigation into what exactly went wrong. And details are starting to dribble out. You know, the people in charge that night perhaps this wasn't their jobs. They were reassigned. They were working significant overtime hours. Possibly, you know, they might have signed off to say that they had checked on his cell when they hadn't. So you're learning a lot. One consistent theme that does seem to be coming from these details, most of them are given through anonymous sources because we don't have official accounts yet, but it does seem like the people working, the wardens, the correctional facility officers, they seem to have been very overworked, and possibly that played a role.
Now, this has all given rise to a lot of unsubstantiated theories, conspiracy theories across the political spectrum. What makes this particular case such a lightning rod for this kind of speculation?
Well, a couple of things there. One, I mean, first and foremost, you have the President of the United States retweeting, you know, sort of completely unsubstantiated claim that the Clintons, Bill and Hillary Clinton, might have been involved or somehow played a role in his death. You know, Trump has just said it was just a retweet. I'm not saying that they were or weren't, but I think that kind of speculation from the highest office definitely fans the flames of these conspiracy theories. But I mean, at the core, this was a very high profile case. Epstein was a man who has a lot of powerful connections. Obviously, he had connections to the Clintons, to Donald Trump, to the Prince Andrew in the UK, and plenty of other powerful world leaders. So he was very well connected. And, you know, there's this idea, there was a New York Times story where in which he bragged about having a lot of secrets about these powerful men. And so, you know, that's obviously fanned some conspiracy as to how he died.
Talking to Lauren Gambino, political correspondent for The Guardian, looking at some of the week's top news in national politics. Let's turn now a little closer to home here in the Midwest. The Iowa State Fair, it's been running for the last week. Usually that wouldn't be national news, but it's Iowa. So every 4 years, it's this huge event, a trial by fried food for any presidential candidate. What are we seeing this year at the Iowa State Fair?
Well, I think in a new record, we learned what a vegan candidate might eat at the Iowa State Fair, and that is a fried peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Cory Booker chose that as his food of choice. So it's been a lot of photos of, you know, very sweaty crowd goers eating all of these fried foods. But I think this year was a little different because it did coincide with these mass shootings. And so you saw candidates try to balance the sort of lighthearted fun that they were having at the fair with forums on gun control and gun violence. And there was kind of this contrast where they would dart from the Iowa State Fair to these forums. There was a couple of them. And so I think that was something interesting this cycle that, you know, usually it is a completely a fun event, a lot of handshaking, a lot of getting to know the voters. But there was also this very urgent and sort of sad undertone this year. But that being said, of course, the Iowa State Fair is still a great opportunity for these candidates to show off their retail politics, you know. Again, shaking hands, standing on the political soapbox, trying to win over these very, very important caucus voters.
This is a unique situation kind of in American politics. This one state, I guess you could maybe throw New Hampshire in, where really being able to connect with a room full of people could theoretically move the needle when actual voting starts in the caucus, right?
Absolutely. I mean, especially with this field, there's so many candidates, and obviously we expect some of them to drop out before Iowa. But even so, you know, if the field remains very large, the pool of people, you know, every person truly could matter. The caucuses are, you know, very sort of unique form of voting. And so it does, you need to hit a 15% or those voters go elsewhere. So really, at the end of the day, you're counting every caucus goer. And so, yes, exactly. When you're at this fair, when you're, you know, eating the pork chop on a stick, which has become the iconic photo op, you are pitching yourself to voters that could very well launch your campaign, move it forward, or, you know, maybe possibly end it.
We continue our conversation with Lauren Gambino of The Guardian, looking at the week's news in national politics. Lauren, we were just talking about Democratic candidates in the Iowa State Fair. There's been some attention on what's going to happen if some of them drop out and some people not running. I want to turn to that now. There's some hope among Democrats that some people currently in the field may get out early and instead run for U.S. Senate in their home states. Who are we talking about there?
We are talking about former Colorado governor John Hickenlooper, possibly to a degree another Colorado senator. And possibly the governor of Montana, who has also been talked about for possibly running for a Senate seat there. So there's two candidates who, you know, might not qualify for the third debate. And who are seen as well positioned to win Senate seats in their state that are seen as, you know, possible Democratic pickups. The Colorado race is interesting. There's already a lot of Democrats lining up to take on Cory Gardner. And then in Montana, you know, there's a lot. If a Democrat's going to win a Senate seat in Montana, they think, you know, someone like the governor Bullock is the right guy to do it because he was reelected governor in 2016, which is obviously the year of the Trump won, and you know his state went for Trump by a significant margin. So there's some hope that, you know, if you're not going to go far in this presidential race, why don't, you know, you're still great Democrats. We want to see you get into these other races and maybe help Democrats pick up some seats for the Senate, which is going to be vital if a Democrat wins and has all of these big policy ideas they want to push through.
And a lot of people have been wondering what Stacey Abrams, who had a close run for governor as a Democrat in Georgia, people have been waiting to see what she is going to do, if she's going to run for president. No, looks like. What are we hearing there?
She has effectively ruled that out. She said she's going to focus on a campaign to sort of guard against voter suppression. She's going to really work to engage more voters, get more people registered to vote. That's been her passion for a long time as a politician in Georgia. And now she wants to take that effort national. She'll be focusing on battleground states. So there'll be states in the Midwest, her own state of Georgia, some states in the Southwest. And this is all part of a theory of the case of how Democrats win, which is you need to mobilize some of these voters who don't always turn out very consistently, voters of color and young people especially. So she's going to be focusing on that. So we can the field in theory, the Democratic field should not get much bigger.
And she said no to president, but whoever's the eventual candidate might give her a phone call, she said.
That's exactly it. She did say, call me if you're interested in the VP slot. She said she'd be interested in working, running maybe as a running mate to any of them. So possibly we'll see her on a ticket.
Talking to Lauren Gambino from The Guardian, looking at some of the news in national politics. You mentioned, Lauren, the aftermath of the most recent round of mass shootings. Democrats keeping up the pressure, Democrats in the House keeping up the pressure on Republicans in the Senate to reconvene and take up gun legislation. What are we hearing from House Democrats on the issue?
Yeah, their big challenge right now is really to keep up the pressure with both chambers of Congress being away on recess. You know, they do not want this to fall off the agenda. It's very much on people's minds at the moment. And this happens so often in the wake of these shootings. There's a lot of attention and then it kind of fades. So that's why they're calling for the Senate especially to come back and to debate gun control measures. They really want action on universal background checks. Republicans are naturally, as we've seen in the past, they're a bit reticent. They seem to be kind of forming a consensus around so-called red flag laws, which would allow law enforcement to take guns away from people who are deemed a threat to themselves or others. But I think Democrats are really pushing for sort of a compromise bill that would take in red flag laws plus universal background check. Trump has somewhat offered his, you know, tepid support for background checks. We've seen him go back and forth on this in the past. So, you know, it remains to be seen what he actually does or where he actually falls on this issue. But he's certainly in talks with Senator Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and another Republicans on this issue. And we're seeing Democrats and activists really, really push hard in this moment.
Let's give a listen to President Trump talking here to reporters on Friday about his thoughts on the gun reform issue. Here's a listen.
We need intelligent background checks, okay? This isn't a question of NRA, Republican, or Democrat. I will tell you, I spoke to Mitch McConnell yesterday. He's totally on board.
Is Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell totally on board with some kind of expansion of background checks, as far as we know?
I think totally on board is a bit too far. What we're hearing from Mitch McConnell is that he wants to have a debate. He's open to a debate. That doesn't mean he's totally on board with passing background checks. Obviously, some Republicans have already spoken out against them. The NRA remains opposed to them. But I think all of this, especially, you know, the NRA is sort of in a moment of internal turmoil. They're having, you know, a lot of issues internally with leadership and some sort of political crises there. And so I think you're seeing activists really want to seize on this moment and really push when the NRA appears to be in a weakened state. And So that's why they're going full force at these Republicans. You know, if we can show that background checks has, you know, widespread support among the American public, you know, and we allow, if we can at least get the debate going, then, you know, then that's more than we've gotten in the past, especially with Mitch McConnell at the helm, because he, you know, pretty much controls what's coming forward in the Senate. And so they're hopeful that if you can just open that door, they'll be able to push through and get universal background checks. But the idea that McConnell is totally 100% on board, I think, is probably overstated.
Even if it does come up for a debate and a vote in the Senate, is it a certainty that we would see the same bill pass in the U.S. Senate, Republican-controlled, as could pass in the Democratic House?
I certainly not. You know, it would have to be it would certainly have to be some form of a compromise bill. I mean, like we were talking about before, you're seeing Republicans sort of coalesce around this idea of red flag legislation, and Democrats are starting to push back, saying we don't want to pass that as a standalone. You need to give us something, you know, probably background checks. So, you know, the Democratic House has passed legislation that they are urging the Senate to pick up. But the Senate's going to want their own version of things, and it certainly won't go as far as what the Democratic House would allow.
On the presidential and, for that matter, congressional politics side of things here, is there concern about from Republicans about suburban districts where this gun issue might be a liability for the president and for Republicans?
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at public support for background checks, you know, a lot of the other proposed measures don't have this level of support. Background checks truly does have, you know, broad swath of Americans support them. And that includes Republicans. And the Republicans who do support it are predominantly, you know, in these suburban areas, especially women, which has always been and increasingly is so in the Trump era, a weakness for the Republican Party. You know, this is increasingly a big issue. I've been out on the campaign trail a lot, and you're seeing women, and you see, you know, kids who, you know, the parents identify as independent, and they bring this up. And so I think as this becomes, you know, increasingly a top of mind issue for voters, I think, you know, you're having Republicans, especially from those districts, grapple with the idea of, if we do nothing, what is the political cost? What is the political cost to doing nothing? And so, you know, that might be the sort of breakthrough. Those type of Republicans representing these districts might be the ones that break first.
And finally, in our last couple of minutes, Lauren, in just a few minutes, we're going to be digging into these protests in Hong Kong. I want to take a minute to look at the reaction here in the United States. What have we heard from President Trump in response to these dramatic protests in Hong Kong?
So Trump is, you know, he's taken more of a hands-off approach. You're seeing much stronger reaction from the congressional leaders. He's in the midst of trade negotiations with China, and that seems to be his priority. And so when it comes to these, you know, very dramatic protests, he sort of said things like, you know, I urge calm on both sides, and, you know, it's... the Hong Kong, I think he said, it is a very tough situation, but didn't really offer, you know, sort of words to the protesters. That is in stark contrast to what we're seeing from congressional leaders like Mitch McConnell, like Republican House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, like Nancy Pelosi, who are, you know, very strongly offering their support to protesters, you know, fighting for democratic reforms. And I think that's, you know, sort of much more in line with what you traditionally see from American politicians when protesters are sort of pushing for these democratic rights.
And Lauren, just very briefly, in the news today, a big drop in the stock market. Things have been rocky in there. I don't know if people are talking about it that openly, members of Congress and the president. Is this something that's kind of lurking over their shoulders, wondering what is going to happen when the markets open tomorrow and the next day and so on?
I mean, it always is. And, you know, the economy obviously is such both its economy in the short term and the long term. It plays such a significant role in elections. So I think, you know, there is some sort of nervousness behind the scenes about, oh, no, what's going to happen? And, you know, especially as we gear up for the 2020, you know, one of Trump's biggest selling points is the great economy. If that starts to to turn sour, if you know, turn south, what is he, you know, what does he run on? Does he still have that to point to as, you know, a great achievement? So I think, yes, there's a lot of nervousness about, you know, both what happens tomorrow, but what happens over the long term. And if these trends start to, you know, continue, where that leaves them as they, you know, try to fight to keep the Senate and obviously the presidency in 2020.
Lauren, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Thank you.
That's Lauren Gambino, political correspondent at The Guardian. She was with us for our weekly look at the latest news in the world of national politics. Talking earlier about the Iowa State Fair, Democratic candidates going there. If you have been to the fair, if you're maybe one of our Iowa listeners, you've met candidates, I'd love to hear from you just what the experience is like and what fried food you ate. Email us ideas@WPR.org.